Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This has to be a quart size, not
it's pretty big.
Yeah, it's not.
It's pretty big.
It's bigger than a pint, yeah.
Yeah, because you could take down a... You'd at least get to the bottom of a pint.
And it was too sweet.
Ah.
Filled with sugar. And I looked at the side, and it has three different references to cane sugar.
Okay.
So, it's not bad.
Right. It's better it's better than Oatly, right?
Well, Oatly...
Well, it's ice cream.
Yeah, well, Oatly is actually not ice cream.
It's not a milk-like product.
It's not ice cream.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
I continue to eat this ice cream every single night, and it's fine, and it's actually pretty good.
Does it improve with age? Is it like
yes.
a pot roast?
Yes, it actually does. Each night I eat it, I like it a little bit more.
Deeper.
I like the dark color of it.
Mm-hmm. Schmutz?
No, I'm used to the sweetness now.
Okay.
And so I tolerate the sweetness.
Where are you with the wine before you get back to this bad ice cream?
I have finished wine
you
for
finished the
night.
Finished the wine? Okay.
No. I finished wine. And then I have ice cream. Or maybe I leave a little taste of
you
wine.
You have to splash. Swallow,
very, yeah. very little. Very, very little.
Well, I have been in touch with the founder of another ice cream company that I think might do
this
well.
Adirondack?
Yes, the Adirondack Company. Okay. Yes.
Nigel went to pick up a lot of stuff the other day from Bonnie. All of the things that are sent to us. Too many things. I do want to thank Elizabeth Kale, who used to work at the sports department at the Washington Post, for sending me something she picked up in a bookstore, Best Sports Stories of 1979. I am included in that, and I had a copy of it, so it goes to Nigel.
Oh, thank you very much.
So Nigel gets that.
It's got that great piece you wrote on Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson, which is a good piece. Nigel gets a lot of things from us.
I do.
Not as many as he wants, but a lot of things.
I'm very grateful for
there are. I wanted to. I got this lovely email from Leon. The other day, a long text from Leon. And Leon was empathizing with what I was talking about from PTI 2 days ago with the Bronny James thing and the problems that something like that creates, where you put it on the show, how you get into it, and how you get out of it. And Leon was explaining, like, sometimes there's a news story about the shooting of a child, and then the weather is next. You know, and it is very difficult to make these transitions without thinking the tone is completely wrong. So I really appreciate what Leon said about that. Yesterday on the PTI show, we had no such dilemmas. Well, we had one dilemma. The dilemma was that Joe Burrow got hurt, was carted off the field in a practice at Cincinnati, and we don't know the extent of the calf injury. At worst, it could be an Achilles tear. And at best, it could be just some sort of strain that'll be gone in a week and a half. You know, but because we were waiting to do the show that would have had to be live at that point, the A's would have had to be live at that point if we got word of Joe Burrow and it was bad. But we didn't. And so at 5:30, the show that we had taped just dropped at that point. In that show, there were two stories that I thought were spectacular. One because of timing and one because of bombast. The timing was on Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani, it had been reported earlier in the day by Sports Illustrated, I think Tom Verducci, but I'm not sure, that the Angels had decided, and I add here parenthetically, wisely and sanely, not to attempt to trade Shohei Ohtani before the trade deadline. And try to sort of get something back under the assumption that Ohtani was going to leave because he's a free agent, just going to walk away. And they couldn't sign him. So they decided not to do that and, in fact, became buyers and went out and traded two prospects in order to get Lucas Giolito from the White Sox and Ronaldo Lopez, a reliever from the White Sox. And I wanted to talk about this because I think I think the notion of not trading prospects is overrated because I don't know the math on prospects. I wouldn't trade a first-round guy necessarily, but somebody else who's looked pretty good in your minor league system and is your third-rated prospect or your fifth-rated prospect. I mean, what's the math? Is it 40%? Is it 60%? Is it 20% that they come through and they become terrific players? And my point was that Lucas Giolito was himself a great prospect when the Nats signed him. And then they traded him for Adam Eaton to the Chicago White Sox. And on the Chicago White Sox, he's been 57-52 with a 4.20 ERA, which is okay, but not great.
He had one great year.
Yeah, all-star year. but not great over that length of time. And without him eating in the lineup every day, the Nats won the World Series. So, I mean, to me, you make those choices. But that became a minor point after what Shohei Ohtani did before we got on the air, which is he pitched a complete game one-hit shutout. The first time he ever went into the ninth inning, ever in his major league career. And then he came back in a second game. I want to get to Michael about this in a second. Came back in the second game, and he hit two home runs, 37 and 38. It may be the greatest doubleheader ever in baseball. And you wanted to make a point about even playing.
Yeah, I would say the first piece here is you have to consider the competition. It's against a team where you expect to win one of those, and if you win two, you're really rolling there. But it would be so easy to see a pitcher after throwing that first game to just say, you know what, I'm gonna hang up the spikes. The bat's gonna stay in the
in the dugout. Put my arm in ice.
Yeah, and I'll sit on the bench. You know, I'll eat the seeds. My arms in the ice. But the fact that he went out and put on a show, I think, is related to what the Angels decided to do the day before, and it's exactly why you had to keep him, and why, who knows, he makes so much money off the field. Make him the best offer you can, and he might just say, I really like what we have going on here. Let's make a run for the playoffs here. They're now three games out of a wild card. I'm not really sure the West is going to be, any easier of a path other than the wild card, but who knows? Maybe he'll just say, I'm happy with what I have.
I don't, you know, he speaks through an interpreter, and you never really know how loyal the interpreter is to the exact words or how loyal the interpreter is to the person, and might change the words, soften the words, or whatever. Yeah. But you have to think he's tremendously relieved. Like he was saying to the Angels, you made the right decision. Look at me now. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's... He throws a, like, you'd have to go to Babe Ruth.
Look, this is a summer, yeah. This is a summer day, but that is the baseball story of the day and one of the top stories of the week.
I don't see how we can avoid that on PTI today.
Oh,
no. I just don't see how we can't. I know we're repeating ourselves, but I don't see how we can avoid that.
I think I just looked it up. No one has ever done that. No one's ever, like.
Babe Ruth would be the only one who could have.
Yeah, I think I saw that, like, Stan Musial had, like, five home runs in a doubleheader, but that's.
Did he pitch the first game?
He didn't get a complete game.
Did he pitch the first game?
No.
Did he do that?
No.
You know how many people pitch complete game shutouts now? One, two, yeah. Three in a whole year, that's all.
Get through the seventh.
The other story that was just a huge story to me was what Sean Payton said about Nathaniel Hackett.
Oh, yes.
Just to bring you up to date on this, Nathaniel Hackett, and Wilbon hated Nathaniel Hackett because Wilbon felt that he personally, Nathaniel Hackett, was ruining Russell Wilson, who Wilbon loves and insists is a Hall of Fame quarterback. And he might be. I don't know. But so he lit up Nathaniel Hackett very early on and absolved Russell Wilson of all blame. Sean Payton takes the job at Denver and inherits Russell Wilson as his quarterback. Russell Wilson is small. Sean Payton had Drew Brees. Drew Brees is going to go to the Hall of Fame if he's not already in. And he's a small quarterback as well. So Sean Payton knows what he's doing with small quarterbacks. Sean Payton's a very good coach. When I was doing Monday Night Football, Sean Payton was sort of fun to talk to. But Sean Payton said of Nathaniel Hackett, very specifically, That's one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL. Whoa, that's an Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
That's a bomb.
It really is.
Right?
20 dirty hands around it.
I mean,
Wilson.
What? What? And he absolves Russell Wilson, even though Russell Wilson brought in his own crew of trainers and dietitians and stuff like that. And Sean Payton has said, we're not having any of that.
Yeah.
So he absolves him publicly.
For letting that happen, right?
Yeah, he absolves him publicly, but he also says, I'm not going for that stuff. And Robert Saleh, the coach of the Jets, is asked about that. It's the head coach. And why? Because right now, the offensive coordinator on the Jets is Nathaniel Hackett, reunited with Aaron Rodgers, who he coordinated for with the Green Bay Packers. That's how he got the job in Denver, because his credential was Aaron Rodgers. And Robert Saleh says, yeah, you know, people can say what they want to say. I don't care what people say. If people aren't knocking you, you're not doing a good job. I mean, Robert Saleh pretty much said the right thing. And what Robert Saleh probably wanted to say was, oh, my God, what is Sean Payton doing to my boy? Now, Sean Payton does this. There's only one reason he does this. To show Russell Wilson he has his back completely. To put all the chips in the middle of the table so Russell Wilson sees them. Now, the problem is if Russell Wilson stinks again.
He had six games.
Yeah. If he stinks, if he's Matt Ryan, then Sean Payton looks stupid. There's a game on, is it Sunday, October 5th? It's a 4:25 game. Jets at Broncos. You think people are going to want to watch that game on TV? Jets at Broncos? Nathaniel Hackett at Sean Payton? You think after that game, Sean Payton and Robert Saleh are going to have an embrace in the middle of the field? If the Broncos lose that game, how stupid will Sean Payton look? I mean, yeah. I just assumed there was a code. You know, Steve Kerr said that somebody broke the code a couple of years ago. He said the kid on, was it Memphis? The kid on Memphis broke. Dylan Brooks no longer on Memphis. He broke the code.
Oh, right.
Broke the code. I have to assume that Sean Payton broke the code here.
There are two breaks that you include in the history of the NFL.
Wow.
And one of the worst coaching jobs. It's just easy to say there weren't the right pieces around him or didn't understand
the strengths
of the quarterback.
No. He about specified the Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Hackett picks, he says it to USA Today, Sean Payton does. Nathaniel Hackett, somebody calls him and says, you might want to take a look at USA Today. You might not, but you might want to take. What do you think he thinks when he sees this? I don't know his relationship with Sean Payton. I don't know if they have any history. I have no idea. But that is...
Yeah, it was stunning.
Harsh doesn't come close. Like, that is just awful. So we got to talk about that. That was fun.
It will be interesting if... that's on October 8th. If the Jets get the ball first, what that first play would be throw right for the end zone.
Well, you'd get the play in on time, which Sean Payton said they couldn't even get the plays in on time. So and by the way, Aaron Rodgers is the perfect quarterback for that situation.
Oh, yes.
The guy who wants to prove something.
Aaron Rodgers is going to say, you go after my boy?
Watch
you going
this.
After my boy?
Leave money on the table just to make a point.
What do you think of this? Yes. What do you, Sean Payton, think of this?
Yeah.
So that is must-watch TV.
100%.
Right? That's
yes.
true.
Yes.
All right, we'll take a break. Chuck Culpepper's first?
Yes.
All the way from Australia? Not New Zealand, Australia.
I'm not sure.
I think Sydney.
He's in Sydney?
I know he's in Sydney.
He was at the England-Denmark game, so whoever that is.
Just missed that one.
Yeah.
How did that work out?
I think England won. It's
good.
A big win for our team.
No, that's
yes.
good. That's good. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
They say AI is taking over everything under the sun. Well, I know AI is powerful. I know AI is fast, but still and all, I'm surprised we're so afraid of Allen Iverson. He can get to the hoop at will. He throws his body around. He plays above the rim and barely touches the ground. Replace us all, Allen Iverson. No one's gonna write a script because of Allen Iverson. No one's gonna write a song because of Allen Iverson. Our civilization's obsolete because of Allen Iverson. AI, you win. AI, you win.
Dan Burns a genius. He's a genius.
He really is.
I mean, he's simply a genius. Wow. He plays in Chuck Culpepper, who is in Australia. What time is it there? What is the time difference between the East Coast of America and where you are in Australia?
I have no idea. I've been here only 10 days, and I haven't figured it out yet. Okay, 14 hours ahead of the East Coast of the U.S., 17 ahead of the West Coast of the U.S. So 8:15 in the morning in the East is on the same day, 10:15 at night in what they call, I think it's like Australia Eastern Standard Time, AEST.
Okay, so it's not tomorrow there, it's tonight where you are. It's tonight.
You know, I'm always more excited when I can talk to people from tomorrow because I can reassure
them.
Yeah,
tell us what happened.
Tomorrow is okay.
Yeah. So
tomorrow is beautiful, but I'm just telling you that tonight is okay. I don't think you should dread tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I dread virtually everything, but yes, thank you. When I did Monday Night Football, I stayed on Eastern time. I made sure I stayed on Eastern time. You travel extensively and you go to far-flung places. Do you have a philosophy like that, or do you let where you are absorb you and you live in their time?
I do the latter one. I start to live in their time. And I've noticed from so much wandering around that I don't really get jet lag anymore. Maybe for a half a day or something like that. But my system must be haywire, I think. But I tend to start thinking entirely in terms of the time zone that I'm in. And right. But this one is really confusing. So sometimes I just can't think of it takes me a couple seconds to remember what day it is sometimes.
I should tell people that you are covering the Women's World Cup, which is being held jointly in Australia and New Zealand. The United States team is in New Zealand now. You are in Australia, yes?
That's right, in Sydney tonight, yes.
Where have you been so far? Just Sydney?
I've been Sydney, Brisbane, and Melbourne so far. And I'm about to go Brisbane Saturday, Sydney Sunday, Melbourne Monday, Adelaide Tuesday for four different matches. So that'll be my biggest slew so far of flying Qantas.
How far are these cities from each other, and how far is Australia from New Zealand?
So Australia from New Zealand, I recall that flight being maybe three to 4 hours.
Oh, so it's a hike. They're not next door. That's a hike.
A bit of a hike. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And then Sydney to, I may have that wrong, but then Sydney to Brisbane is one, and Sydney to Melbourne is one.
Oh.
And I think Sydney to Adelaide is little more than one. And then Perth is the one way, way out there where you get your sort of, you know, New York to Los Angeles kind of flight, because it really is just about that.
Yeah, well, Australia's a big continent. Australia's the size of America, right? It's big. Australia's big.
That's right. The 48 contiguous, yeah.
Right. Yep. So it's winter there, am I correct? It's winter.
It's winter. It's winter.
Do they have snow?
I saw some snow-capped mountains outside an airplane window the other day between Sydney and Melbourne. And I took a photo and I keep looking at it. I'm just still not completely sure that's what it was.
Right.
But I think it is. You know, they do reasonably well in Winter Olympics. And, you know, one time I asked someone at a Winter Olympics, they said, oh yeah, we have skiing. You know, we have skiing here. So it's winter, but in a Sydney winter is maybe 70 in the day or 68 in the day.
Oh.
And about 45 at night. So last night I went to an Australia watch party outdoors at a park for the Australia-Nigeria match. It was 45 degrees out there. Or a ski cap.
Well, I mean, that's pretty cold for outdoor soccer, is it not? Is it not?
I think it's a little bit cold for outdoor. I think the players find it kind of nice.
Oh.
Mostly. I think it's just a little bit cold for that, yes.
Okay.
You know, the spectators in the park, some of them had on shorts and flip-flops because they're Australian and they're tough, you know. But it's I would say that's, you'll get that sometimes, say an English Premier League match or something. You'll get some days that are that cold. I don't think it's a big burden for the player.
Let's get to the important things, because you're covering the Women's World Cup. The most important thing to me would be, how's the food there? Is it different food from the United States? How's the food?
The food is, it's sort of, I guess I think, when I think of the food in Sydney, for example, or Melbourne, I do think of sort of like London or New York, where you can find any more food from, or Paris, food from all over the world is here. And it's, you know, especially I think because of the proximity, there's extremely good Asian food.
Right.
And, but I just think, it's sort of the truly international mix is here. And, I'm trying to think of anything I've had that one time when I was in Tokyo, you asked me if I'd eaten anything that I'd never eaten before. I don't think that's happened here. I don't think there's been anything that, I saw a tangelo in the market today, and I'd never seen that, like a tangerine and an orange or something put together. But I haven't had any, you know.
Well, you can get those here,
food, I would say.
Tangelos, right? You can get those here. I remember when I went to Korea for the Olympics, there was kimchi and bulgogi. One went right through me, and one was okay. They were native foods in Korea. Is there anything native in Australia? I also remember when I was younger, New Zealand used to take advertisements out on television all the time about their lamb. That they said they had the greatest lamb in the world, but you're not in New Zealand. You're in Australia. Do they have lamb?
Sure they do, and they have kimchi, because as we know, the world has become like that, where things are not, things that we used to consider exotic are not exotic anymore. So I think of I don't know why this came to mind, but. It was at the buffet at breakfast the other day, but Vegemite, I remember when Men at Work released the song Down Under in 1982,
sure.
I believe it was, winter of 82, 83 maybe, that I had never heard that word before at that point. That song was the first time I ever heard that word. So I think that's definitely a thing of Australia, but I don't know that it's... So exotic anymore.
I imagine the crowds are great at all the games, I would imagine, but everything is a sellout, yes?
Yes, or very, very close to it. And, you know, it's, in my opinion, the best sports country in the world, the one with the most interest, most passion for it, the sportsiest country in the world. And so... it's going to support, it's going to support whatever it has. It had a live golf event in April right after the Masters, and I wrote some snide line about it, about Phil trying to, to manufacture excitement for live. And I got a couple emails saying, you don't have to manufacture excitement here. If it's sports, we're going to support it. So that's very much in play with the World Cup, because if you rank the popular sports of Australia, soccer is not number one or two, I don't think. I don't think it'd be three or four on most lists. But because, they care about sports in general, love sports in general, these events are extremely well attended, and the Australian team, called the Matildas, is beloved and followed and fretted about at the moment because they're having trouble.
Yeah, Waltzing Matilda, of course. I would think they've had great international success in golf. They've had great international success in tennis, both individual sports. I don't know how they do in rugby. I know that we have exported baseball there, and I know there are baseball leagues in Australia, because a friend of mine I went to high school with, his son played in one for, quite some time. But it's interesting to hear you say that you think they're the best sports country in the world.
I think they're the country where the the average person is interested, probably more than anywhere else. You know, so there was a government survey that said more than 90% of Australians had at least some interest in following sports.
Wow, that is a lot. They have basketball success too. You know, I mean, they've
got cricket.
Yeah. What can I ask this? I don't even know if you know the answer to this. Why did we open in New Zealand?
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's
the draw. I guess it's the draw. Yeah.
I just sort of wondered if there was deliberate to take the United States team and put them in New Zealand as opposed to Australia. I don't know how that works. I know you're watching this, but have you done anything else? I mean, have you visited Ash Barty? You know, I mean, that'd be a good story, right? Ash Barty in retirement. Sure. That'd be a good story, right?
I thought of that very thing a few hours ago watching England play Denmark, and it got to halftime, and I thought, it'd be great to catch up with Ash Barty. I really did just think of that. I'm going to go see some Australian rules football. I'm going to go to some rugby. I am going to try to, you know, binge on as much of it as I possibly can. There's no cricket because it's winter. I don't know if Nick Kyrgios is playing basketball, which he loves at some place around here, but I'd go to see that.
Yeah, and I wrote that down too. I mean, I was trying to be an editor for you. I was trying to give you story ideas just in case, like you said, after a while with the Women's World Cup, I'm done. I need a break. I need a week to do something else. I don't know how much you know about women's soccer. I don't. Are we in the right position? There was some moaning after the tie with the Netherlands that we are not as good as either we were or we are cracked up to be. But you're in Australia, not in New Zealand. You have any sense of that?
Yeah, I do. I have loved following the game more and more across the years, too, as it's just gotten better and better and better. And, you know, we've kind of watched this evolve through our lifetimes. It's been one of the, if I had to think about it, maybe the biggest cultural change during my life is this, you know, that a women's sports event could be this big and this good. I think, and that's the kind of the answer to the question, because I think the United States is no longer as far ahead of others, and then the contenders at the top, you know, who have won World Cups before, Germany, and Germany, the U.S., Norway has won one. Sweden has a really high ranking. Japan has won one. They're not as far ahead of the other teams as they used to be. So we're not seeing as many of those old 8-0 games anymore. There's been a few 5-0s here, but you know, not those routes that you just look at them and you feel sorry for somebody. And I think Nigeria's win over Australia was a real example of that, of how, you know, the world has kind of caught up, and the sport has come to be valued in more places. And I think that all figures into why the United States, everybody around it has said, to try to win this for the third straight time is going to be really, really tough, and it's tougher than it's ever been.
Well, enjoy yourself. Let us know, when it is tomorrow, let us know how that came in. That would be great. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you so much, Tony, from afar.
Chuck Culpepper. Love having him on the show.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take a break. Pat Forty will join us, we think. We hope. Last time didn't work out. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Scott Anthony of Burbank, California. It's called The Path, and he writes, it's a song I wrote for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary and recorded with my siblings. We'd like to think of ourselves as the Jacksons, but we're probably closer to the Osmonds or the Von Trapps. Just ahead of their 56th anniversary this month, I've slapped a fresh coat of paint and released to the world this song that is a testament to the winding trail that old couples have walked together. And it was released last Friday. It is available in all the usual places you get music. Scott Anthony, and it again is called The Path. Michael, if original work by original musicians is sent to us, how is that done?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonycornizershow.com.
It plays in Pat 40, who we finally have. We missed him last week. We got him this week. And there are, and it's good because we got one more story. Like last week, there were two stories. And this week, there are three stories. Maybe last week there was just Northwestern. But no, there was a Dion story last week having to do with Brent Venables. And now we got a better Dion story. So we got the Northwestern sinking into the ooze. We got Jim Harbaugh negotiating a plea deal after lying to the NCAA, which seems to be being totally passed over by people who look at this story, the lying. No one seems to care about this. And now we got Colorado moving. Let me start with Harbaugh, because, Pat, I think I'm the only person who is completely offended by this. Everybody else goes on television and says something like, well, you just should have told him, I'm not even talking to you. I don't have to talk to you. But what he did, if I'm not mistaken, is lie. This is how politicians lose their jobs. They lie to a congressional investigation. What do you make? Am I overreacting to the Harbaugh thing?
No, I don't think you are, Tony. I mean, that's one of the prime tenets of college athletics, crime and punishment, is if you get caught, you better tell the truth. If you don't, penalties are going to be way worse. And that's exactly what this is. So, yeah, for everybody who's minimizing it and every Michigan fanboy out there who's saying, he just bought him a hamburger. This is just a hamburger. No, it's not. He's lying about the hamburger, and that's the problem. Ask Dez Bryant, who had his eligibility stopped at Oklahoma State, about lying to the NCAA. And so, I mean, Harbaugh, frankly, a four-game suspension, there are people that have had worse. Bruce Pearl got a three-year show cause and got fired at Tennessee for lying to the NCAA. So I'm not one to minimize this by any stretch. And I was at Big Ten Media Day yesterday. We tried to talk to Harbaugh about it. He cannot talk. And so he kept saying he can't talk, but he's dying to talk. You can tell. He's going to have an eruption whenever this is all finalized, and frankly, I think it's going to be misplaced rage.
Jim Harbaugh is one of the most respected, one of the most vocal, one of the most well-known college football coaches probably ever. He's not Hugh Freeze. He's not Art Briles. Many of the things he said, I agree with. But he's lying here. He's lying. The arrogance, he knows the rules. The arrogance of setting himself above the rules at an academic institution like Michigan really bothers me.
Yeah, and, okay, right. That's the thing, is this is Michigan, which holds itself to a certain standard.
Yes.
And Jim Harbaugh proudly holds himself as a Michigan man.
Yes.
Who embodies what that school purports to be its ideals. And so, you know, that's where this is so hard for Harbaugh to actually accept that he is an NCAA violator who lied about it. And he's really, seems to me, just struggling with this idea that, oh my gosh, now I have an NCAA rap sheet. But he does.
I mean, I don't think they'll lose any of the games. If I understand the penalty, you can coach up until the day before and you can coach after the game. You just can't be there at the game. I would imagine Harbaugh will try and watch the game and communicate. And I would imagine if the NCAA was smart, they'd have an NCAA officer right in the room with him, not letting him communicate. Is there anything like that?
I would imagine he can't be in the stadium, so he's probably going to watch it at home.
Yeah, and text.
Yeah, is he going to be talking to people who are in the stadium? I would imagine without a doubt.
Right.
But, yeah, to your point, he can coach during the week, and so considering who they're playing, it's East Carolina, it's UNLV, it's Bowling Green, it's Rutgers, this shouldn't be something that costs them a game.
Right.
They have a playoff-caliber team again on their hands, and so, they should be way better than those teams. And He'll coach 6 days of that week. He won't coach on Saturdays. It shouldn't be a problem because the schedule's easy, because they dumped a series with UCLA. They should have been playing UCLA in Pasadena this year. Michigan got out of the series.
I didn't know that, so it makes it easier. Rutgers is the Big Ten game. They're not the best in the world. Let's go to Colorado. Is it a big deal that Colorado's going to the Big 12, where they used to be in the Big 8 all the time?
It's a big deal for the Pac-12 and the Big 12. For Colorado, I mean, you know, it's my home state. I love it. But, like, they don't fit anywhere. You know, they're not really a Pacific team. They're not a Southwest or Midwest team. Right. They're their own deal. And so, you know, yeah, they wander over here. They wander back. You know, welcome back. Good to see you again, Colorado. Just try to stay out of the way. But it's what it signifies for both those conferences is significant. For the Big 12, they have now rated another Power 5 conference. And they added four other schools before this year, but they weren't Power 5 schools, and now they've gotten one of those. And they took it from a league that they've been basically competing with for survival and for media rights and for a level of respect and credibility within the Power 5. So big blow to the Pac-12, which cannot get its act together and present a media rights deal and keep everyone together, and a nice win for the Big 12, which I think we all wrote off as basically dead 2 years ago.
Well, I mean, I just think it's bloated with teams that nobody cares about. I think with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, they don't have a single glamour school there in terms of football to me. But I agree on the Pac-12, and I would think that others are looking to get out. I mean, I would think that Cal and Stanford, now, you know, you're familiar with Stanford. Who wouldn't want Stanford? Who wouldn't want Cal? That boosts your academic profile, and they're good athletic schools. I just think that the Pac-12 is a disaster. It's like, what did I say on TV yesterday? It's like they packed it all into one of those pods, and they're just going to cart it off and put it at the side of the road somewhere.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, they're a mess. They're an absolute mess right now. But I don't know. Does anybody want Cal and Stanford? I don't see anybody sticking up a hand. I mean, shoot, the Big 12 would probably take them, but
yeah.
Why would Stanford want to be in the same league with Texas Tech and Oklahoma State? They have no interest in that.
Right.
Where they would like to go is the Big 10. The Big 10 isn't rushing to go get them. So, you know, the Pac-12, they've got issues that they cannot seem to address. And so the Big 12 now, their next move, they're going to Arizona and saying, hey,
yeah,
come with Colorado. Let's go. And they'd like to also get Utah and Arizona State, but that seems unlikely. They may not be able to get Arizona. So if their 14th school could well end up taking a swing at UConn, which of course makes no geographic sense and would be a terrible move, in my opinion, for UConn. But they're next on the list if Arizona and the other Pac-12 schools say no.
Let me personalize this, because everything involved with Colorado is involved with Deion Sanders. Do you think Deion knew about this before he signed on? Do you think he's happy with it?
I think he's happy with it, absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that played for the Dallas Cowboys and was a star there, as a home in Texas, whose sons played high school football in Texas. I think he feels like that's a place he can recruit better than in California if he's going to really put down roots at Colorado. So did Deion know that this was a possibility? Yeah, I don't know whether anybody knew it was a probability or a likelihood until pretty recently. But I think this is a move that both the Big 12 looks at Deion Sanders, says, yes, we want you. And Deion says, yeah, I'd rather be in the Big 12.
Okay, let's go to Northwestern. They're sinking. They're really sinking, right?
Yeah, this is, I don't even really have the words to articulate what a disaster this is. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, what's transpired, the number of lawsuits they're now facing, what to do with this football season. I was, again, at Big 12 or Big 10 Media Day, and I was actually offended by what Northwestern did. First of all, the players didn't come. Okay, fine. You can make a case for why they would be put in a thankless position. But they sent a guy who had been the head coach for 12 days, who had been at the school for 6 months, whose previous biggest job was at North Dakota State, and they sent him out there to the podium and said, you're the face of the university. President, he hadn't done a press conference since this thing happened. Athletic director, he hadn't done a press conference. The AD was at the stadium for Big Ten Media Days, but he hid. He talked to a couple people, but he didn't do a press conference. Hey, you, David Braun from North Dakota State, nobody knew who you were. You just get out there and handle this for the next hour, okay? I mean, I just thought it was an absolute profiling cowardice and another example of mismanaging this whole situation.
We tend in our business to be very sympathetic and partial and root for Northwestern because there's so many people in our business who went there. You know, Wilbon went there, and Blackstone went there, and Rachel went there, and Adondi went there. And, you know, they're all bleeding purple all the time. This is a disaster, right? I mean, they could cancel seasons, couldn't they?
Theoretically. I mean, honest to God, you know, look, given the academic stature of the place, if they hadn't built that massive athletic complex, I wouldn't be completely shocked if they the powers that be got together and said, let's do like you with Chicago. Let's just pack it in on big-time athletics. I don't think they're going to do that, but it's that bad with the football program right now. I mean, they are in serious, serious trouble. They're in disarray. We're going to see how much worse this gets before it gets better, remotely better. And
there are all these lawsuits, and the lawsuits are naming the president, the previous president, the AD, the previous AD, who is, by the way, the head of the ACC at the moment. I mean, they are all out there. And I think for balance, I have to ask this question, and I hope you have an answer. How common is hazing? Maybe not to this degree, but how common in the sort of bonding of teams is a type of hazing that we might back away from as a result of this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have, like, data or anything on it. Anecdotally, I think it's pretty common.
Me too.
Or was. I would say was. Right. Because if this doesn't change it, nothing will. You know, I think there have been some instances in recent years where, you know, that's one word. You say hazing, and you watch administrators at colleges lose their minds because there's been a lot of lawsuits, a lot involved with fraternities and stuff, yes, but also sports teams. And so I think people have worked hard to at least tone it down.
Yeah.
But have they really gotten rid of it? I think it's time to get rid of it now, certainly. I mean, if you're watching an entire school, you know, turn into a smoking crater there, you might want to make extra, extra, extra sure none of that stuff's going on in your locker rooms or your dormitories or anywhere else that your teams or your organizations gather.
You have children who were college swimmers. Your daughter was at the finest program, and Stanford is the finest combination of athletics and academics in the country. It is. Nobody would dispute that. But you have this experience. Surely there was some type of hazing even on those teams, the sort of rite of passage from, you know, recruit to freshman to sophomore, I would think, or am I wrong?
Without being specific, because I had three different kids at three different schools,
right,
but I know for a fact that it absolutely occurred at least one of the three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure did.
Yeah. I mean, we are reaching a point. I am not defending Northwestern. Please let me make this very clear. But I also remember at my age, coaches yelled at you, and that's the way it worked. That was the rite of passage. You earned your way on the team by suffering at the hands of the coaches or the upperclassmen. And then they embraced you, and you were part of the deal. And that, of course, perpetuates itself over many years. Do you think we're going to see the end of that?
Well, I think we're in the process of a big reckoning in that area, and I don't know what the right answer is. You know, I really don't, in terms of where's the line between, you know, coaching and berating. I played sports. I was yelled at. It didn't bother me. It was part of the deal. But I was also, look, I'm in my late 50s, so it's a different time. It's a different level of sensitivity, in my opinion. And I'm not casting any aspersions here, but I think the sensitivity pendulum has probably swung a little too far. And maybe there will be a correction at some point in time here. I'm not saying we need to go back to crassly kind of Neanderthal days of team building, but I also think that coaches have to be able to coach. Peers have to be able to yell at peers, and there has to be some tough coaching involved. And I don't know where we are on that scale, and I don't know, you know, where we exactly should be, But I think that it's gotten to the point where a lot of coaches are a little bit of afraid to coach, and probably some upperclassmen are afraid to get on younger kids.
Yeah, and it's at the moment it is just shimmering out there. There, I think that the rules for 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years are all being called into question, and I don't think anybody knows what to do. I don't.
No. I mean, I think that's clear, very clear. Yeah. And, you know, look, we don't have to go back again to the days of, you know, like coaches could physically, you know, assault players.
No, you can't have that. You can't have that.
No. But I think there probably just needs to be a serious reckoning of what's athletics supposed to do. How hard, I guess, are you able to push athletes to do what they want to do? What are the lines and the barriers, and what aren't?
This is going to be determined over quite a long period of time, I think. Thank you, Pat. Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Tony. Thank
Pat
you.
Pat40. Listen to his podcast. Oh, I forgot to. Is Pat still there?
Patty's,
I'm still here.
Yeah, plug your podcast. I always do that. Plug your podcast.
College Football Inquirer, Yahoo Sports Platform. Get it on Apple, whatever else, with Dan Wetzel and Ross Dellinger.
Thank you. Pat 40, boys Thank and you. Girls. We'll take a break. We will have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Don't we all wish we could play piano?
Yes. Just like this.
Yeah. I mean, I would sit there and play for hours.
Of course.
I would, if I could do this.
Just go to random bars, restaurants.
Does it mind if I sit in? I'm good.
Sounds like you just walked through the smoking section.
Yes. I mean, honestly, if we could all play like Bruce Griffin.
Yes,
we would all play like Bruce Griffin.
That's what Chatter was missing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, my friend, and you will be thrilled.
Randy Meisner passed on yesterday. And so rather than do something funny or try to, you know, make light of some long lyric, we're just going to go to the lyric that Randy Meisner with the Eagles was most famous for. So put me on a highway and show me a sign and take it to the limit one more time. Now, it is true in the Eagles documentary that Glenn Frey, a gangster, Glenn Frey got very angry at Randy Meisner when Randy Meisner said, I just don't have it tonight.
Yeah.
I can't go tonight.
Didn't work for Glenn, did it?
You got to go.
Yeah.
Thanks to our guests today, Chuck Culpepper and Pat 40. Thanks to our sponsors today, Grammarly and Simply Safe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a review. So we got this. Remember we played Karen Jonas?
Yes.
Oh, just the other day.
She was terrific. Wonderful. Yeah, from Michael Granberry, I believe.
From Patty Scuderi. I've been a TK fan since the 70s. I grew up in Montgomery County and read you in the Post. Listened to you in the mornings on 980 and followed you on your success, to your success at PTI. Stood in line once at Montgomery Mall to get a signed book. Earlier this week, a friend from Magruder High School emailed me to say he was pretty sure he heard Karen Jonas on your podcast. I'm her mom. I thought he was mistaken, but I listened, and there she was. Karen is one of the many dedicated independent musicians who keep at their craft despite a lack of monetary success. Thank you. Thank you for featuring music from the lesser knowns on your show. It means a lot to them and their moms. I mean, really, how nice is that?
That was wonderful. Yes.
From Taylor in Sacramento, Mark Feinsand is not alone in his traumatic United Portugal experience. While we were engaged, my wife and I had a trip to Portugal similarly truncated by unexpected cancellations and nights spent in the airport. Mark described his letter to United as a novel. The one I sent after my now wife's experience was very short, only two words. I'll let you figure out which words they were.
Hi there.
Okay. From Anthony Beeson, I miss the betting segments. Could we have Jeff Ma and Ann Hornaday on together? I'd be very interested in their prognostication on the weekend's box office returns for Barbie versus Oppenheimer. Who will make more money? Who does the monkey have? Well, Barbie's going to make more money.
Yeah, Barbie's
more people. Barbie has a larger appeal than Oppenheimer, but Oppenheimer, I'm happy to say, appears to be the better movie.
Well, there's some issues with both movies overseas, and that would... Are you doing domestic or?
Well, yeah. I mean, there are certainly places in the world that the Oppenheimer movie is not going to play. From Earl Brewer, who is the owner and director of Virginia Elite Lacrosse. A few weeks ago, I heard a young fellow express his happiness after having his first email read aloud on the pod. Congratulations to this first timer. I remember well the moment I heard my name mentioned by Satchmo as he reads my email about the guy in my neighborhood who had five Pontiac Solstices in his driveway. Happy to report those cars are still there. Going through my own personal history of successful emails read on the show, my record, please pause for a more dramatic effect, 5-11. Ooh. Not very good, but I guess there are some emailers worse than me. Guess that's one positive way to look at it. from Matt. This is a long one, right? Oh, no, it's not from Matt. It's from Jim Rockford, not that Jim Rockford, from Campbelltown, Pennsylvania. In case you ever find yourself in the Bird in Hand Intercourse Metroplex, I'm providing you with a handy South Central PA town pronunciation guide so you won't sound like a dope to all the locals. Spooky Nook is pronounced Spooky Nook with a spook. Spooky Nook.
Spooky Nook.
That rhymes with Nook. Lancaster is pronounced Lancaster.
Right.
Lebanon is pronounced Lebanon, unless at least one of your grandparents could hold a conversation in Pennsylvania Dutch, in which case it is pronounced Lebanon. As a bonus, Harrisburg, the state capital, is just northwest of all this. Locals pronounce it Lake Orion. Hope this helps. From Les Cossack in Galena, Ohio. Isn't he always emailing us about the traffic patterns in Galena?
I believe so, yes.
Another instance of the connective tissue on this fine show. Last week, while vacationing in Rehoboth, my family and I also enjoyed a round of golf. We did not cross paths, but I'm sure we had the shared experience of the trepidation of playing golf on the roof of a building looking over the boardwalk and the frustration of that darn windmill on 13. You know, as I type this out, I'm starting to wonder if we patronize different courses. From Jamie Edwards in Jackson, New Hampshire. On my way to a New Hampshire hiking trip, I stopped to look for Slim Jims. The store didn't have what I wanted, but they did have Tillamook honey glazed beef jerky. 100% because of the show, I went with Tillamook. Their jerky is excellent. Slim Jims.
Snapping to.
You know, yeah. I mean, in my childhood, Slim Jims were, sure. Everybody had Slim Jims. From Joe Schultz of Pacers Running. I've been waffling back and forth about reaching out since I heard questions about Hoka a few months ago. And after yesterday's show, this is a long time ago, I decided it was time for me to send you an email. I've worked in a local run specialty store in the D.C. area for 15 years, and I've seen brands and technology update and change substantially over that time. While it is true that low drop or low offset footwear can cause your legs, Achilles, calf, and hamstring in particular, to lengthen a little more with each stride, it also puts your leg and foot in a more natural position. When you are barefoot, your heel does not naturally rest higher than your forefoot, and lower drop footwear aims to create a more natural position while providing cushion underfoot for impact protection and support to cradle the arch and heel. Your New Balance 990s have a standard 12mm drop offset, meaning your heel rests 12mm higher than your forefoot. The New Balance Fresh Foam that Michael got have a 4mm offset, as well as a rocker geometry. And most Hoka shoes have a 4mm or 5mm offset. I hope that clears up some info for you. I've been wearing the Fresh Foams, and loving the fresh foams.
Very happy with them.
So
right?
Maybe I just go to the Hoka's if they're if
now the Hoka has helped me when I've gone on these long stroller walks with my knee pain. But then I go back to the arms, which are falling apart and basically slippers.
So are the Hokas give you knee pain?
Or no, they help take, your knee? They help the knee pain.
Okay. Additionally, getting properly fitting and supportive footwear that matches your feet and needs can be tricky. At my company, we specialize in specifically fitting each customer who comes through our door with just the right shoe for them. This involves a quick conversation about the use of the shoes, any pains or problems the customer has, a quick analysis to determine the arch profile, length of foot, length of arch, and width of each foot. This is followed by observing how the customer walks without shoes, so we can see how each foot impacts the ground and moves through the stride. With all this info, we then select a shoe that should match pretty well. Somehow I think I've read this before.
You have read this before.
Right, I've read this before, and I've come back to it because I misplaced it, because I remember Pacers, where I work, is the store that did, Joe writes, Gulf Relief 5K way back in 2005, where you and Carville, and I do remember this, kicked off the race before it started. I do remember that. So I read it again.
That's all right.
Is that a sign of terrible old age and dementia?
It's a sign that we need to clean up your work table.
I have too many things. I have too many things. One more from Jim in Lutherville. I heard Mark Feinsim. Everybody wants to write about Feinsim.
Oh, can I just say before you dive into this, we got so many emails about the, you know, similar problems with the United. Some of them just too long, but we appreciated all the stories.
He sounded so defeated.
From Jim in Lutherville. I heard Mark Feinsim's horrific tale of his vacation in Portugal. It's making me feel really good about my Dewey Beach decision. If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, everyone do wear white.
Now, if there's anything I can do for you.
Well, I certainly hope,
I certainly hope you'll die soon.
Say AI is taking over everything, everything under the sun. Well, I know AI is powerful. I know AI is fast, but still and all, I'm surprised we're so afraid of Allen Iverson. He can get to the hoop at will. He throws his body around. He plays above the rim and barely touches the ground. Replace us all, Allen Iverson. No one's gonna write a script cause of Allen Iverson. No one's gonna write a song cause of Allen Iverson. Our civilization's obsolete cause of Allen Iverson. AI, you win. AI, you win.
There's a path that starts where two hearts meet and winds through time beneath their feet. Some for moments, others years, all each minute of each day till life's complete.